Hello, my friends, and welcome to 20 Minutes with Bronwyn. In case you're new here, I'm an authentic communication coach, and I help visionary leaders become spellbinding communicators. My intention for this podcast is to create a space in your schedule for ideas, insights, tools, and strategies designed to help you realize your full potential as a leader, sometimes by offering conversations with brilliant people, and sometimes by offering my own advice. But my hope is that you leave each episode inspired, empowered, and more connected to yourself, your work, and your life. So let's get cracking, shall we? I recently had a conversation with a friend whose words have been echoing through my mind ever since. She said to me, "I am sick of not using my voice." She said, "It's not that I need to find it. I know who I am. I know I have valuable things to contribute to the conversation. But still, even at my age and at my level of professional accomplishments, I still struggle to speak up in a room full of people, and I'm over it officially." And I love the way she framed the issue. There's so much talk of finding your voice, but not a lot of talk about deploying your voice once you found it. And if, like this friend of mine, you are officially over swallowing your words, ideas, and perspectives, if you are sick and tired and kind of bored of your own aversion to speaking up in a room full of people, this episode is for you. And you and I are going to break this thing down step by step, and we're going to get you a framework for using that voice of yours so that you can say what you need to say when you need to say it. And if you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to go ahead and make some assumptions here. I'm assuming that you are one of those people who is trying to improve. You are my people, is what I'm assuming. People like us are earnest and we want change. And yet change is elusive because we get inspired, we feel ourselves upgrading. And then it's kind of like when you go on a cleanse for 30 days and at the end you've lost some weight and you feel amazing. And you say, "Oh my God, this is who I am now." But then a few weeks later, it all comes back. And despite feeling like you've upgraded, what you've really just done is participated in a hype cycle that wasn't sustainable. My goal with this conversation, and it will be a multi-part conversation, is to help you create sustainable, lasting change that no one can take away from you, not even yourself. And because we're having such a big, audacious goal is that if I were in your position, I would definitely have a pen and paper, because we're going to get into it together here. And if you are driving and listening to this, that's totally okay too, but you're going to want to pause this thing and talk to yourself out loud as you're driving, because we're going to make some progress here, because we're over it. Am I right? All right, so let's begin where all good things should begin, which is with intention. What is your intention here exactly? You know you want to change. You know you want to use that big, beautiful voice. But what is the intention behind the change? And if you're like, "I don't know what you mean," let me give you an example of an intention if you're open to it. How about this? "I want to meet and become the version of myself that knows how and when to use her voice." I love that intention. I want to meet and become the version of myself that knows how and when to use her voice. And if you want to use that, you can. But if you want to come up with your own, just press pause and come back to me. Okay, come back to me. So we've got an intention now. I'm going to go with the one I used. I want to meet and become the version of myself that knows how and when to use her voice. It's pretty solid. Now we need a why, because just having an intention isn't always enough. Let's settle on why you're doing this. You're sick and tired of not using your voice. You're fed up of playing small, but being sick and tired of something is not the same as having a why. So right now, write down or speak out loud as many whys as you possibly can. Maybe they sound like, "I want to see what I'm truly capable of. That's my why." Or, "I want to make a difference." Or, "I want to make the most of this life before it is O-V-E-R, over." Listen, I just turned 50, so I feel that. I feel that why every damn day of my life right now. Or maybe you want to remake your life in a way that honors who you truly are or who you truly might be. So get your why on. Press pause and come back. Okay. Hi, if you press pause. So now let's put them together. You've got your intention and your why. So it might sound something like, I want to meet and become the version of me that knows how to reliably use her voice because it is the gateway to the life I want to live. I love this why because it reveals something important here. The capacity to reliably use our voice when the moment calls for it is the cost of entry for living a big life. It's not the destination point, it's the departure point. I'm kind of obsessed with this idea, actually. My good friend Ophira Edut, one of the Astro twins, shout outs to Tali and Ophi. The other day we were talking about this and she said, what if we stopped seeing our dream or big goal as a destination and instead saw it as the beginning of a real journey? And that why to me feels so delicious because the thing about being at midlife, and if you're listening to this and you're not quite there yet, let me preview some gold you're about to reap when you get here, is you start realizing that dreams and goals are so, so, so important, but then you hit them and you're looking around like, oh shit, now what? Right? So I'm very into this concept of setting dreams and goals not as endpoints, but as new launch pads. I'm very into that. It feels more rewarding and satisfying because I've knocked down a bunch of goals, y'all, and it can be, what's the word I'm looking for? Anticlimactic. So I want you to set that intention, set that why, not as a permanent destination, but as the beginning of the real journey. Okay, so now you've got a written intention and a why. I want you to write it down somewhere visible. Decorate it, frame it, do whatever you need to do because you're going to need it, my friend. This shit is not easy. And you'll need to return to this intention and this why over and over again as you work on this. So, okay, we've got your solid why, you got your intention. The love and light part of this conversation is kind of over for now. Now we go into the darkness. We go into the tougher stuff. And to me, this is where all the fun is. And where we're going to begin is we need to start by making a map of your triggers. Here's what I mean by that. In order for you to meet and become the new, more powerful version of yourself, we need to first understand the obstacles keeping you from accessing that self. And this is where I think we go off the rails a lot of times when we're sort of doing improvement things, when we're trying to grow, quote unquote, is we get all excited about the love and light part, but we fail to really address the obstacles, the triggers that get in our way repeatedly. And until we confront those things, until we slay those dragons, we're never going to level up. And we're going to constantly wonder what's wrong with us. Why are we like this? And I think it's because we didn't get real about the triggers or the obstacles holding us back. So in the context of this conversation, we are talking about how to use your voice. There is a pattern to when and how you go silent or go mute. So our job right now is to figure out what your patterns are. And once we nail that, we can start working on sort of unleashing that big, beautiful voice of yours more effectively, okay? So let's map your triggers. I want you to think back for a minute. Think to the last time you chose to stay quiet. What was the situation? Who was in the room? How many were in the room? How did you feel about your status in the room? In other words, how much power did you perceive you had? Were you triggered into silence because of external triggers or internal triggers? Or a combination of both. Now, if you're like, what? External, internal trigger? Huh? I got you. External triggers are things we perceive outside of ourselves in the environment. Internal triggers are things we conjure up inside of ourselves. With external triggers, the call is coming from outside the house, so to speak. And with internal triggers, the call is coming from inside the house. Okay? So here's some examples of external triggers. You got triggered into silence because of the size of the group. It was a whole lot of faces staring back at you. Another very common external trigger. You went mute because you were using a mic and hearing the sound of your own voice amplified freaked you out, or just you anticipated that hearing the sound of your voice amplified would totally freak you out. That's another very common trigger. Another one, Someone was making a face at you, giving you stink eye, or staring at you impatiently, or worse, giving you that neutral face, the blank dead face. That's a big silence trigger right there. When somebody's giving you stink eye, doing something weird with their face in the audience, that'll shut a person down. Here are some examples of what I mean by internal triggers. You were just about to express a dissenting opinion and you got afraid. Or you had to speak off the cuff extemporaneously and your brain froze. Or your body betrayed you in some way, right? Your heart raced or your mouth went dry or you got splotches on your neck. Any of my people out there, splotchy people? That used to be me. Or were you afraid? Were you anticipating that your body might betray you in some way? I've worked with people that have very real sort of vasovagal responses, and they worry that if they speak in front of a group, their vasovagal response will spark and they will literally pass out. Literally. That's a thing. That's a real thing. Or were you triggered by an old wound, a moment of what I call speaking trauma from your past? Those are examples of external and internal triggers. Right now, I need you to press pause and write down all of the things that were going on with you and why you went silent in that moment that you're thinking of, okay? So press pause, make your list, and I'll see you in a second. Press pause. Okay, welcome back. Now look at everything you wrote down. And what I want you to do for right now is I want you to circle all of the triggers that were external. The call was coming from outside the house, so to speak. For this episode, I'm only going to talk about dealing with external triggers. Next time, we'll cover internal triggers. So keep this list, but right now, just circle the ones that were external. Okay? Now look at what you got. Okay, what you're looking at right now is you have circled the terrain that is causing you to go mute. You are beginning to create a map of your own inner terrain, right? Half the time when we go mute and we stay silent and we eat our words and we hide our voices, it's because we don't actually have any conscious idea of what's really going on behind the surface. It's like we're trying to navigate through landmines that are buried in secret places. What you just did was begin to map where the landmines are. And when you know where the landmines are, we can either dig them up and get rid of them, or we can step around them. But the first big step is knowing what they are and where they are and what brings them out, right? Now you know what your patterns are. And once you know what your patterns are and where the minds are, you can start working to replace them. If you're a visual person like me, I need that map in front of me. I need to be reminded of, oh yeah, this is that thing I do. Because I swear to God, maybe this is just me, but it seems to be a human thing. We tend to be in this lifelong game of remembering and forgetting, remembering and forgetting, remembering and forgetting. A perfect example with food is, like, to me, it's such an analogous thing. Whenever I think about change, I think about food and exercise. I know that I have to eat when I'm at a 7 out of 10 on the hunger scale. I know this. This is so basic. I've been in the skin suit for a good many years. I know this about myself. But would you believe that I never remember that? Like today, I'm starving and I forgot that I'm starving. So I have to set alarms to remind myself to eat, right? That visual reminder is what keeps me on track. And obviously I blew off my alarm today. But the point is, we need visual ways of remembering, because as humans, we're just playing hide and seek with ourselves, as Liz Gilbert once said. So keep this set of triggers visual. Enough said. Okay, so know thyself is one of those timeless pieces of advice, but rarely do we talk about what that means in practical terms. How do we begin to notice ourselves? By mapping that shit, right? So if you're thinking, okay, Bronwyn, great, I've got this map of my own limitations, now what? Don't worry, I got you. I am going to give you a practical strategy for dealing with the most common external triggers. I will cover the ones that I hear the most often in my work as a coach and as a speaker. And I have worked with literally thousands of people on this very issue. So the triggers I'm going to go over with you are the ones I've observed the most. Having said that, if I don't cover one of your triggers, just drop me a note and maybe I can do another episode or at least give you some pointers. But I'm going to give you the greatest hits, okay? Number one, the number one external trigger is audience size. This is the whole lot of faces staring back at you problem. And here's the thing. Here's what I want you to know. Public speaking or performing anything in front of a large audience, and let's be honest, that's a subjective term. Large to Bruce Springsteen is an audience of tens of thousands, but to you and I, it might just be an audience of 20 or 200. It doesn't matter the scale. What matters is this one simple truth. Humans get scared when other humans are staring at them expectantly. Let me say that again. The fact that you get scared of speaking or performing in front of a live audience does not make you crazy or weak or unworthy. It makes you human. Okay? Can you just fully hold that for a second in your mind and body and spirit? Whatever shame you've been carrying about this fear, you have to let it go. We're all scared. I make my living as a public speaker and I'm never not scared. Now, of course, asterisk, are there people that aren't scared? Are there people that are the anomaly? Of course, but they are such a minority. But just because your fear is understandable and rational and human, it doesn't mean you're off the hook. And there are two strategies I want to offer you right now for dealing with this primal fear of faces staring at you. And you got to do them in sequence. Okay? Ready? Body first, mind second. When you feel yourself starting to freak out, heart racing, stomach upset, your body starting to go down the fight, flight, or freeze path, we do not love this path for you because we lose access to the part of our brain that is creative, empathetic, problem solving, and we need that part of our brain in a public speaking situation. So job one is to calm down your nervous system. Focus on the body. Get that nervous system calm to a level that allows you to operate consciously instead of unconsciously with fear shutting you down. And so how does one calm down quickly and arrest the fight, flight, or freeze response? Take a guess. What do you think the one strategy is that does that? Breathe. First, you got to breathe. That is job one. When you feel yourself starting to freak out, breathe into your abdomen, ideally through your nose if your allergies aren't bothering you. Close your mouth. That was a nasal breath in. And you can do a mouth breath out. Make your exhale longer than your inhale. That type of breathing will calm you down. And you need to trust this. I know that there's a voice in your head that's like, breath, I'm freaking out too hard. It can't be that simple. You have to start with the breath. The breath is the gateway to everything. Okay? I could do a whole entire episode on breathing, but we're going to let that sit, right? So I told you it was body first, mind second. Body first, breathing. Now let's talk about the mind. Once you've breathed and slowed your heart rate down, now you have the headspace to mentally repeat a message to yourself. It's in the form of a mantra. Back in the day, we used to call them affirmations, but nobody does that anymore because it sounds so dorky. So we moved on to mantra, right? Once your breath is under control, you are going to repeat a simple statement that helps you override the fear, right? Here's a couple of samples for you. You can borrow these or come up with your own. Here's a great mantra. This isn't about me. It's about being of service to them. I love this one because when I'm afraid, it's usually an ego trip and I'm just afraid of failure. I'm afraid of what they'll think of me. Basically, I'm making it all about me. And when I can remember that it's about service to them, the ego just quiets and I can focus on slaying, right? So that's one. This isn't about me. It's about being of service to them. Another helpful mantra is this one. I love this one. I trust myself to say what needs to be said. I trust myself to say what needs to be said. That's a great mantra for in the moment, on the fly, extemporaneous speaking. If you're in a big meeting and you know you're going to need to pipe up and say your things, I love this because it grounds me in the confidence and faith I have in my own mind and my own skill. So feel free to use that one. Another one is this one. This is a great one. If the face is looking at you is really triggering. Ready? They're looking at me because they're interested in what I have to say, and I have something to say. They're looking at me because they're interested in what I have to say, and I have something to say. That's a great one to repeat. And lastly, another mantra that I love, my nerves are a sign of my passion and my big, brave heart. My nerves are a sign of my passion and my big, brave heart. So right now, I want you to start thinking about what mantra you are going to use to calm yourself down in the face of many faces looking at you. You can borrow mine or come up with yours. Body first, mind second. Okay? And listen, we don't have to be grandiose about the story we tell ourselves. We can be humble in our desire to stand in front of a group of people and just contribute, right? So take a moment and look at your map of triggers. If audience size is on there, just below where you wrote audience size, write breath plus new mantra, and then you're going to write in your mantra. So now you have on your map the trigger and the solution. Okay, you got a plan. Granted, there's a lot more we could say about all that, but for now, we're going to keep it simple, okay? And for those of you out there who are the people that are afraid of fainting in front of a room, that have a very real faint response to fear in public speaking, I have a lot of clients that will throw a beta blocker situation at that. They will take medication that helps them with that. And if that is something you're interested in hearing more about, please drop me a note. Go to my website, bronwyncommunications.com, drop me a note. Let me know, because this is pretty rare. I only see about once every 100 people, I would say. But if it's something you want to know about, I will get us a psychiatrist on here and we will talk about that in depth. But let me know if you want to hear more about it. Okay? Okay. So we talked about the trigger of a whole lot of faces staring at you. Let's talk about the second trigger. How about the ye old microphone and amplified voice as trigger? Now, I'm one of those weird anomalies. I love the sound of my voice amplified. I never met a mic I didn't love. But here's what I want you to know. People like me are the exception, not the rule. Most people hate hearing the sound of their own voices. So again, if you're afraid of this and you hate the sound of your own voice, you're normal. But again, just because you're normal doesn't mean you're off the hook. It just means you need to find a way to get more comfortable hearing your voice amplified, and you need a quick little soundbite to recover when you do get handled the mic and you freak out a little bit. So let's break that down. If you're triggered by the sound of your own voice, number one, you're going to get comfortable with hearing your voice amplified. This is a desensitization strategy. I once worked with someone, we'll call her Lisa, who was about to take on a new role in her career that involved a lot of microphone time. Specifically, what we used to call the Madonna mic. I think they call it something else now, but our hands-free mic, the kind that clips over your ear. And Lisa is a very soft-spoken person and identifies as more inward, more introverted. For her, the idea of hearing her own voice sort of caroming around the room made her literally break into a cold sweat. So I had her go on Amazon and get a hands-free microphone that could hook up to her Bluetooth speaker, and she used it around the house, talking to herself, talking to her family for like 15 minutes a day, just so she could get used to hearing the sound of her own voice without having an anxiety attack. And you know what? It worked. In fact, incidentally, Lisa and I also worked on her mantra for coping with the stress of a bunch of faces staring up at her, that first trigger we talked about. And her mantra I loved. She said, "These people need what I have, and I'm going to focus on giving them the best that I can give," which I loved. Go, Lisa. So your protocol for overcoming the trigger of hearing your own voice amplified is to get desensitized. Go get a $40 Madonna mic and just practice at home with your Bluetooth speaker that I know you have until it doesn't make you cringe anymore. Okay? Let that shit go. That's external trigger number two, right? And now the second piece of that was we got to come up with something funny to say. Let's say you get handed the mic. You've been working on this. You're ready. You get handed the mic and it still freaks you out and it still sounds too loud. You just want a little thing that you always say. So for example, let's say I get handed the mic. I'm ready, but I start to speak and I'm like, holy cow, that's loud. You can just say, ooh, that's loud, and then keep going. That's all it is. You diffuse your anxiety by saying to the audience, wow, that's loud. I can hear my voice very much so right now, and then continue. People usually have a little laugh, but the reason it's so important to just say a little thing like that is it discharges the anxiety. It helps you sort of channel that shock factor at hearing the sound of your voice in the room. Okay? It's that simple. Okay. We've talked about faces in the crowd trigger. We've talked about hearing your voice too loud trigger. Now let's talk about someone in the audience who makes stink eye at you or gives you dead face. I would argue that this has to be the toughest trigger to deal with. There is nothing worse, and I do mean nothing worse, than an audience responding poorly to your content on stage or in front of the room. It is gut twisting, it is anxiety producing, and the protocols for this trigger are different depending on the size of the audience. If the audience is large and one or two faces in that audience are giving you negative signals, it's my recommendation that to protect your sanity, you ignore those faces and you focus on the majority of faces that are actually giving you warm, curious listening vibes, right? The fact is, some people have really mean listening faces. I remember hearing Elise Lunin, host of Pulling the Thread podcast, and she was formerly the host of Goop's podcast, talk about her listening face. And I was so curious about it because my best friend growing up had a really scary looking listening face. And so I went on Netflix to see if I could find examples of her when she was on the Gwyneth Paltrow Goop show to see what her listening face was. And sure enough, Elise Lunin's listening face signals skepticism. You want to see a good example of a listening face that's scary to talk to? That's a good one. But the reason I love this example so much and the reason why I'm calling it out, Elise Lunin, is that you could not ask for a more sensitive, present, focused, generous listener than Elise Lunin. And yet her listening face would signal to you on stage or in front of the room that she's not liking what you're hearing, even though that is literally the opposite of what is going on. So I tell you that because there are times when you're going to get a listening face looking at you that looks like they are against everything you're saying. If it's a big room, you can't stop the show and be like, what are you thinking? You look skeptical. You can't do that. So what you need to do is let it go. Assume that they're just giving you their listening face and that they're very devoted to listening to you right now, and move on. Move on. This actually happened to me. My God, I was giving a speech in London years ago. Some of you who've seen me speak before might have heard this story before, but I was giving a speech in London and I was in front of the room. I was doing my sort of how to communicate with a short attention span audience. And it's a talk I've been perfecting over the years. And when I give it, I give it. I give it all you got. I give it all I got. And I was looking at this audience and they were looking at me dead faced. And I was like, oh my God, I'm bombing. It was terrifying. But there were so many of them and the content was what it was. They had chosen that talk. It wasn't like I showed up giving the wrong talks. Literally in that moment, I had to say to myself, this is just their collective listening faces and I'm going to come here and do what they hired me to do. And so I did, gave it all I had. And afterwards I was like, wow, that was my first real bomb. I just bombed that. I later come to find out that British audiences culturally are not like American audiences. American audiences, they have no poker face. They're like, oh my God, I love what you're saying. Or even if I don't love what you're saying, I'm going to smile at you and give you a nice face. In England, that is not how it works. They are nobody's fool. They make you work for it. And the next day, I got incredible feedback from it. My point in telling you these stories is, have a plan so that you do not let a stink face or many a stink face in a large audience throw you off. Okay? Okay. But let's say the audience is small and you're getting stink eye. Maybe there's 5 or 6 or 10 people in the room and you're getting stink eye. I recommend in this case, checking in with the person whose facial expression is giving you problems. And here's my favorite script. Ready? This is what I say. You know what? I'm just going to pause for a moment and check in because I can tell you're having a reaction to what I'm saying. And I'd love to know more about what you're thinking. Okay, that's the line. That's the script. And you say that with warmth and kindness, and yet say it to the person giving you this face. And if the person says, oh, that's just my listening face, you're good to go. You can keep going. But if the person says, I disagree with what you're saying, then you can respond kindly with this statement. Wow, I'm so glad I paused. Say more about what you disagree with and get them to talk. And while they're talking, you get to breathe and calm down because it's scary when somebody disagrees, which will make you able to listen to what they're saying. And here's what I want you to know. Some of the most substantive, magical conversations, magical presentations I've ever given have come because of moments like this. Moments like this can become portals to a depth of connection with a group that you couldn't have imagined or planned for. Here's an example of that. And this is one of my favorite stories. Many, many years ago, I was giving a talk to a group of sales executives here in San Jose, where I live. And many of them had come from all over the world, right? And they were sort of attending this corporate training at the company headquarters. And I was at the part of my talk where I talked about body language, right? And I was talking about power poses and how to signal confidence and how to signal power and all of that kind of good stuff. And it was room of about 50 people. So for you, that might be too many people to do the check-in thing, but for me, it was not. For me, I felt very comfortable pausing because I saw somebody in the room expressing facial skepticism. It was pretty mild, but it was there. I could see it and it was bugging me. So I said, you know, I can tell you're having a reaction to what I'm saying. And if you're open to it, I would love to know what you're thinking. And he looked at me and he said, I'm from Seoul, Korea, and confidence is not the first thing we want to signal in a business relationship. And instantly I realized my mistake, right? Instantly I realized, oh my God, I am giving such American advice, which was kind of the point. They bring these folks in from all over the world to kind of get immersed in Western business practices, but still, he was right. And so in that moment, I was grateful to him for showing that I was missing an entire part of the conversation around body language. But there was a part of my ego that was, oh my God, he's calling me out in front of all these people. But that ego part of me never serves me. So I said to him instead, I said, I am so glad you said that because you're bringing up something incredibly important, which is different cultures need different signals at the beginning of conversation. So would you be willing to come up with me and demonstrate body language for what you do want to convey in your business environment in South Korea? And he said, yes. And he came up to the front of the room and he said, what we want to convey is trustworthiness and humility. And so he came to the front of the room and he did exactly that. And it was so powerful. It was such a beautiful moment. This is why I love checking in with people. It opens this gateway to this whole different level of connection. And you know what else it does? It signals to the room that you are powerful and unshakable. Because someone who is willing to temporarily put aside their agenda and invite someone with a dissenting view to participate in what you're saying, it is a power move. It is a baller move. Ballers only, please. And it's awesome. So that's that one. Okay, so we have now covered the most common external triggers that I encounter in my work with people. And listen, God knows there are more, and you will tell me which ones I missed that pertain to you. But what I wanted to show you through that process is what it means to take a trigger or an obstacle that's in your way, pull it out into the light of day and out of the sort of shadows of the subconscious and make a plan, right? We named it. We figured out what about it that bothers us. And we came up with a plan for dealing with it. That's the protocol. That's the thing. And the best part about this is you can start practicing dealing with these triggers right now to start using your voice more actively. This isn't going to be one of those things where you take a bunch of notes and forget about it. I want you to start practicing this stuff ASAP. And because I'm definitely way past the 20-minute mark, I'm going to save internal triggers for our next episode. And I really hope you join me, because the internal triggers, when the voice is coming from inside the house, it's my absolute favorite. Talk about juicy. And if you're a senior leader or a C-level executive listening to this thinking, this isn't enough, I need some one-on-one Bronwyn time, I'm here for you. Head over to bronwyncommunications.com, click on the button Work With Me, and let's talk. As always, thank you so much for giving me the gift of your time and attention, and shine on. We need your light.